Hello, and welcome to No Killing Goblins. I'm Dragonus, and I am back. Mostly.
Yay, Dragonus is back. I'm not alone anymore.
As this is, of course, as always, Oshi. And, I apologize. It wasn't exactly long COVID, but it was maybe medium COVID.
There's lengths of COVID?
Okay, you hear people talk about having, you know, long COVID, and they can't taste anything for a long time, and they don't have the energy to get out of bed. And it was kind of like that, but just not as bad.
Thank God for the vaccine, I guess?
I guess, yeah.
Because that's what happened to me, right? I spent 3 weeks in bed, and then it took another 3 weeks to recover, and then I was fine. But yes, Dragonus is back. I no longer have to carry the weight of the show by myself or be bothered by mean people. Just Dragonus.
Well, I mean, I guess technically I'm a mean person if you really want to get down to the nitty-gritty.
Okay, I don't even know where to start. You missed out on, like, so much stuff because I took the opportunity to, you know, try to replace you. There's no other way to go for it because I thought you were going to die.
I mean, I probably wasn't going to die. Probably.
I don't know. It might have happened. Who knows? So, I just started test driving people. I went with Lynette, I met a Mr. Muffins, I asked Dylan to come on. Essentially, I was testing everybody, and all I found was that they annoyed me more than anything else in the world. You, not so much.
Wow, I really hope that they listen to this and just feel the warmth and love radiating from you, Oshi.
It's the professional opinionisms of the professional podcaster. You know?
Sure.
I guess I have to ask, COVID's been keeping you down a little bit, but have you kept up with the Wandering Inn? Are you up to date?
I am. I mean, there's only really 3 chapters put out this month, so it's hard not to be caught up. I have been holding off on the Volume 1 rewrite, though. I'm thinking I want to wait until it is more or even totally done, and then reread the whole first volume at once.
At this point, if you guys have been listening, you've heard my ranting with Lynette about the opinions concerning Volume 1 and the way folks are just, like, framing it in a way that bugs me. For Dragnus' edification, because he doesn't know about it, so folks give the opinion that they don't understand why the rewrite is needed, usually right after saying, I love the new changes. I didn't really like Volume 1 when I first read it.
That's an odd combination of words to leave one's mouth at the same time.
I can't even just fathom it. And then the kind of, I'm trying to preserve why I love the start of Volume 1 when so many people didn't like the start of Volume 1. It's just, there's a lot of contradictory commentary and not a lot of very constructive criticism. And I ranted about it last week because I was sick and tired of a lot of other stuff, and I took it out on the people who were commenting on Volume 1.
I'll have to read it eventually. I actually loved the opening of Volume 1 myself. It's when you get towards the middle-end bits where you start seeing little things that don't feel like they match up with the rest of the story, and a lot of bits where the writing and prose just does not match what Pirate's natural style has evolved into. Like, it makes sense to me. I get why they're going to do it, I guess.
That's the thing. Everyone goes, I guess, and I guess always, like, implies that it's not necessary.
This is gonna sound weird, but I have a relevant, like, immediately happened to be while I was off work for COVID thing that is in this exact situation, but with a different author I read, where there is this, I like it a lot. It's a fun little, thriller, horror, crazy series. It's on Amazon. It's self-published. It's called Pretty Little Psycho. It's by Casey Kauser. It's very fun read. The prose was a bit rough, but, like, the characters really shined through. I could really feel who they were in their dialogue. The insane escalation from one accidental death to multiple murders and conspiracy to commit more felt very natural. And I found out the 4th one had come out earlier this year when I wasn't looking. I went to read it. Something didn't feel right. I find out that the first book and then the next 2 after, to a lesser degree, have been rewritten at some point. And since I liked these so much to buy them in physical copy, I don't even have the Kindle to go check and see what's changed. So, like, I can understand why people have this inherent nervousness about stuff being rewritten that they have already read and internalized. And it literally bit me directly on the ass, not like 2 weeks ago.
I miss you so much because I've been having a rough time articulating the other side of it. And that's exactly, I understand that. That makes sense. But nervous about the rewriting of it isn't the same as here is what they're already deciding to do, and they're showing you the process, the nuts and bolts of it, as they do it, and you're getting this glimpse within, and you're taking this opportunity to see this internal glimpse to express your dissatisfaction with the fact that it's happening.
True, and it's not even nervousness about the fact that it's being rewritten. It's nervousness the idea of something changing, and then it's not gonna match. Like I think that it's not as big of an issue here because this is the beginning material being shifted to better match millions of words that have come after it. But I don't know if anybody listening or if you, Oshi, are familiar with D&D and RPGs and has ever had what I call addition poisoning, where you're trying to do something in, say, Pathfinder, and I'm running this game and I start quoting rules from 3.0 D&D and then sit down a week later to run a 5e game and start asking for fortitude saves. It can be hard to keep all this stuff straight when it's very similar and has had little changes here and there. And like, I feel like a lot of people have just that nervousness that the changes are going to be more radical than they look, and then they're going to be caught struggling to remember what it should or shouldn't be.
Okay, that's again a fair critique, but it's something that would have been inherently considered when the conception of this work was being like done, right? The pirate would have at least thought about the fact, and then whatever outline or structure they came to would have included that perception in it. And so far as I can see, it's a matter of shaping the novel differently so that the introduction is more inviting. Because my understanding of it remains, it's going to be a physical novel. It's going to be something that they can put on the shelves of a library, right?
Indeed.
If you're picking this up in the shelves of a library, not everybody is as internet savvy. Not everybody's, actually, most people aren't as internet savvy or connected or understand this. They're going to just read this book and not be able to conceptualize everything. So you need a little bit of a faster paced start. You need a hook. And that hook has to blend properly and have the proper emotional like resonance with the readers, and that doesn't necessarily happen with the way Volume 1 is written right now. No matter how much you enjoyed it when it started out, that doesn't mean that you enjoyed it for a very particular reason, but most people might not. Okay, we're straying into this discussion topic a lot because I'm letting it happen, but we probably should move on.
Yeah, and it is the big news.
It is the big, well, actually, that's not the big
Oh,
news.
what is the big news then?
The big news is Pirate Abba opened a merchant store. So the merchant store is out. There's stuff to buy. There are little things that I want. There's a fucking pan and it's all coming out. Like, dude, I want stuff. There's t-shirts. There's a fucking mug that says, "Is it war?" I want it.
Now I'm gonna be
I want it.
deeply torn because on the one hand I want a wandering inn pan that I can just stick up on the wall, but on the other hand I do need cookware, and it feels like it would be a shame to cook with it.
I think it's one of those things that's dealt like usable. It's like a cast iron thing, so it's actually usable.
I cook everything in cast iron too.
Yeah, so it'll be pretty fucking good. I'm just saying, merch store is out. If you're listening, you probably know about it already, but just in case you don't, it's out. Go buy stuff. The other big piece of news, it was my birthday.
Oh, well, happy birthday, Oshi.
My birthday was on the 18th, yeah. That's it. That's all I got. Those are the two big pieces. My birthday and a merch store. Oh, wait. I guess the other wandering in news is that Pirate App is going to do an AMA on the 26th of July.
Ooh, nice.
Are you going to ask questions?
Probably. I have to think about what I'm going to ask, though.
Yeah, there's so much.
Pirate is like oddly accessible for just randomly asking questions in the Discord, and a lot of times I feel like if I have a question, it's already been answered somewhere.
Oftentimes that's true. And the other thing is they kind of avoid, I mean, we all know the antisocial nature of Pirate Abba. It's like they avoid answering questions in the first place. If there's so much like plot questions people will ask, the pirate probably will just not straight up not be able to answer. So I'm imagining the kind of questions that people ask, like, and then trying to figure out how many of them will pirate even answer.
Oh, yeah, no. So I follow, like, the Brandon Sanderson AMA stuff any time he ever does a Q&A. And because Brandon Sanderson fans are a strange and unique group of people, there's, like, a whole website that just collates all of this information because, you know, he has all those complex and intricate and interlocking magic systems, and by gosh, I want to understand them. It's 90% of what people ask about. And then the other 10% is, hey, can you tell me the plot of the next book? And I've never understood that 10% of people who are just like, hey, who is the real main villain? Or, hey, is this character gonna die? What author answers that question?
I don't know. Maybe pirate.
I could see Pirate just to like mess with somebody answering one of those questions, but it being entirely a lie.
Yep. I was gonna also talk a lot about what you thought of Pirate's new like writing schedule, right? I don't know how much the public folks have been talking about it, or Patreon folks have been talking about it too, but Pirate's massage their schedule a little bit more, and they're trying to like openly do their projects in their normal writing schedule instead of writing TWI, which implies that Volume 9 will come out slower and be, and if it's also it's going to be shorter, it's going to be different, certainly from Volume 8, right?
I think that this is absolutely a healthier and more open schedule, and Pirate will benefit from it, but I am going to go back under my bed and cry now because I'm not getting as much wandering in this month.
It's like instead of 100,000 words, you get 75 or maybe 60,000. I don't know. Instead of two novels, you get one novel. I don't particularly find it disastrous.
Oshi. If I was good at diets, I wouldn't be fat.
Oh God, that's so true, because I'm in the same boat.
This is healthier. It's better for Pirate. More power to them. I absolutely think that it will work and that it's going to be, like, a good idea all around. I just am now on a diet. That's just life.
Okay, I guess we're on a little bit, but they're doing like side projects and they're kind of openly streaming it. So if you're, I guess it sucks for you because you're not a stream watcher.
Nah, but like I said, it is what it is, and I am thoroughly interested in like what the future holds, and I don't begrudge Pirate any of it. Like I said, it's just healthier for Pirate, and I think it's also going to be a lot cooler for the fan base to be able to see stuff in motion and understand more what projects are happening. But before we go too far down too many different rabbit holes, one last rabbit hole I want to take a very fast, very just quick, like one sentence detour down.
Yeah.
I wanted to say a very, very belated thank you to Seth, who had, before I got COVID, sent us, you know, a bunch of different emails and questions he's asked, but he also wound up giving me a copy of a game on Steam just to be cool like that. And then I got sick and hadn't had time to thank him for it yet. Thank you, Seth.
You should also read the email from Kyle. It's very long. But it's very cool. Kyle also contacted me on DMs on Discord as well and recommended this very interesting anime whose name I'm completely blanking on. It's about this animal handler girl named Erin. I've started three episodes. It's definitely a trip and it's very slice of lifey and it's also very like weirdly dark. It reminded me of I can see why.
Kimono no Soja Aaron?
Yeah, I think that's it.
That one's a good one.
Yeah, you've watched
I've watched many anime.
it?
That's just like I said, I don't do diets well.
I completely forgot you missed meeting Mr. Muffins and we were talking about anime. I think last episode that I recorded with them, with Dylan and Mr. Muffins, they talked about Gundam. What's your favorite Gundam?
I may as well pick a favorite limb, Oshi. Actually, no. I have a favorite. It's Zeta, followed shortly, immediately, actually, by one of the most recent ones, Iron-Blooded Orphans. And then you have most of the rest of the Universal Century Wing. G Gundam always floats up and down depending on how hot-blooded and manly I feel that day. Oh god, I forgot Thunderbolt. Shit. Can I talk about movies or like side OVA projects separately when I'm talking about favorite Gundams? Because
what have I done? What have I done?
Let's just say that at MomoCon, if I wasn't running D&D, I was over at the Gunpla area where they were building those.
Dude, I wasn't even the one who asked the question. So Muffins asked the question, and it was at the end of the episode, and I was trying to segue into the emails and responses. But yeah, sure, go ahead and talk about Gundam if you like, because I got nothing.
Oh, no, no, you really don't want me to start digging too deep into favorite Gundam stuff.
Okay, so for emails and responses, so what we've been doing, or I've been doing, thanks to a reader suggestion, is posting the questions on the Reddit post and also in all the other announcement places on Discord that I put it up, and hoping that people will respond. And I did get a response from a DAS Niveau. And so we asked two questions last week. What was your favorite Gundam? And which one would you like to see in TWI? I forgot that part. So before I read his thing, do you want to tell him what you would like to see in TWI if it was built?
I really don't know.
Imagine the gnomes built a Gundam, or the Frerlings built a Gundam for somebody. The dwarves, or whatever the fuck it is.
You know, I could see it working, but, like, you would definitely need that pilot class to give you something to help with all the nausea from the way robots going up and down will make you vomit yourself to death. I really don't know. TWI kind of already has everything that I want. And anything that it doesn't already have, I'm expecting to show up in the future.
I'm just saying, like, what do you want to see out of all the Gundams in the universe? If it just popped into TWI, how cool would it be?
Do you know what I want to see? I want to see, not a Gundam, I just want to see a right and proper spaceship just fly up to the place. Just hover right over Israel and say hello.
Okay.
And then plant a flag so you, that a fourth group of people can randomly wander into Israel and declare it's theirs.
Okay, so that was the second question. What is the lamest class you can think of for TWI? Because, I don't know, we were talking about shit, and I was going like, what is the weirdest, like, the worst class you could possibly get? I don't remember what I responded, but I think it was cool because I'm a cool person. And Das says the lamest class would be dock worker or warehouse worker. Other than greater strength and some sorting skills, the coolest thing to come could be a spatial skill to stock more into storage than normally. Useful, but lame. The best Gundams, quote-unquote, are the Evangelion units. Nothing beats trauma-fueled god clones driven by abused 14-year-olds.
Yeah, no, the Avas definitely have a good look to them. Also, that answer is spoken like somebody who's never had to work in a warehouse before. I can think of a million and one great little skills that would just make all of that so much faster and easier.
I was going to say the same thing because I work admin and in on the floor. And let me tell you, there's like so much shit that you need to know. It's like an endurance test. Especially a busy warehouse. If you ever work for Amazon or anything, it's even worse.
Yeah.
Because they don't even treat you like a person. You're a machine in the cog.
And, like, dock work itself is also so fundamentally different, although I don't have any firsthand experience at it. God, and now I'm having flashbacks to actually the best paying job I've ever had, where it was a plastic extrusion plant, but it was 12-hour shifts for, like, mandatory overtime, and I literally passed out. That's one where I could have used a class to help out. Like, almost any working class job, I can see a lot of really cool stuff. Meanwhile,
what I know about dock workers is that they have... Right, this is the wrong crowd for that. A PG answer. So what I know about dock workers is it tends to be a really regimented job and always seems to have some attachment to... At least in New York, there's a tinge of attachment to, like, criminal enterprises because of smuggling. And aside from that, it's just a lot of like heavy work and a lot of logistics, especially for managers and stuff.
I was about to make a ditch digger joke because I could see a world where somebody with the ditch digger class didn't literally dig ditches. They were just so used across so many different forms of menial labor that they were the metaphorical ditch digger. And then I thought about all the really cool fucking skills you would have from something like that, and the fact you could walk
I
onto any
know.
job site anywhere in the world and do any job on it, probably better than a person with the specialized class, because by the time you are a ditch digger, you probably have worked every one of those jobs at our level, I don't know, 29, 35. Like, I have trouble thinking of a class that isn't cool, and that's something I think is really cool, because I'm trying to think of a lame class.
I think I did think of a lame class, but I can't fucking remember it. But I was gonna say, there are like the what you can gain from them eventually, because it's all about progress, is built into the system to force you to grow. But lamest class, like any class that essentially encourages you to do nothing, is probably the lamest class. By do nothing, I mean.
Like layabout or something like that.
Yeah, and speaking of layabout, we have an email from Varun, and he says, "Hey guys, I've been listening to the podcast for a while now, and I'm finally putting in the effort to answer a question. Yay, somebody! Okay, my first thought for worst class was peasant or serf, but I think that may just be more sad than stupid. In the same vein, a lot of the goblin classes like stirrer and grabber also seem pretty limited and sad. I don't really see what the application of the ultimate stirrer would be, unless it's something stupid like being able to stir the ground into quicksand or something."
Oh, that would be so cool, though. Or you could stir the air to fire off a vortex or deflect arrows.
Yeah, I'm not gonna read the rest of the email because it's spoilery, but there is one line. So Varun says the actual stupidest class is probably layabout, as you can only get it by actively deciding to be useless and having no ambition.
But it's me! Actually, no. I sometimes wonder what my work history would equal out to if I had a class, and there really does need to have to somewhere in the world be a I've worked too many jobs at probably not a lot of levels, but I've got a wide range of work experience. What class is that, pirate?
You'd probably condense, like, you'd probably combine into some kind of, like, multi-focus worker class, like the
Kind of a thing.
No, we can't say those words, because
Oh
it's
shit, yeah,
spoilers!
we are way too early for that. Fuck.
I was going to say, it would probably be something like multi-purpose worker, or some kind of consolidated class that lets you be in lots of different places, maybe like a traveler class or something.
Maybe, because I was also thinking there's been so much secretary work and sales work and customer service work and menial labor and other menial labor. Now I'm trying to get a paralegal certification. Where does it end?
I was gonna say, maybe you're a Renaissance man.
Yeah, you know what? I'm the modern Renaissance man. You know what else probably is a remarkably lame class, though?
What?
Clown.
Oh, God, you're right. Clowns are stupid, except these chapters prove that that's not true in any way.
I get nervous about it. You see, I'm one of those people who has a fear of clowns.
I am too!
And I'm not talking about, ooh, clowns are creepy. I mean, like, I see Ronald McDonald pop up in a commercial or if I'm driving down the road and, like, I get dizzy. Clowns freak me the fuck out.
I am of two minds about clowns. So, one of my first experiences with clowns was the It book from Stephen King. So, let's just say I don't have a generally good impression of clowns. And then the second one was when we went to this animal petting thing. I don't remember if it was in middle school or in elementary school, whatever. We went to this animal petting thing. It was during the fall for a Halloween, for like pumpkin carving and all that shit. Let me tell you. That clown with his cigarette in his mouth and talking to somebody with a, like, let's just say I had a distinct impression that these clowns are a lot terrifying-er.
Maybe. And admittedly, like, I'm at a point in my life where it's not as bad as it used to be. And this is going to sound kind of ironic. When a clown is trying to be a scary clown, like when you have a clown that is deliberately like designed to be spooky horror clown, look at him. He's got all the blood and the teeth. And I'm like, something about it doesn't click as being this is unnatural and horrifying. It's just, oh no, scary clown.
Okay.
That and Baskets. Baskets the Clown, Zach Galifianakis. Check it out.
Oh my God, Baskets. I forgot about Baskets. It had Louis, I forget his last name, Louis Armstrong. No, not Armstrong.
I know who you're talking about.
He was so such a giant part of my childhood. He had a like a show, a cartoon show on Fox.
Louis Anderson.
Louis Anderson, yeah.
Yeah, he played Christine Baskets, his mother. It's about a sad clown who has to work as a rodeo clown because he can't make it as a sad clown. It almost sort of broke the spell for me on clowns.
Right. First, Zach was fucking amazing on Baskets. I can't believe he didn't get any like massive awards for it.
Same.
It was very surprising the people, just the way they did the entire. Just go watch it, guys. It's really good.
Yeah, it's very funny, very like really good. And also, on the one hand, I feel like we need to gently lead into the subject of clowns with some side stuff. But on the other hand,
Wait, hang on, hang on, hang on. We should do this before anything else. If you're uncomfortable with horror or clown imagery, please skip this episode or end these chapters. It will not harm you too much. You can get summaries of the chapters at other times, but for now, if you dislike clowns severely and if you dislike horror imagery or dealing with mental illness in any way, skip these two chapters. Just go ahead and do it. You'll be fine too.
these two are all just set up. They're very self-contained. I think they're very good. And if you have a clown problem, then maybe don't.
Well, it's not just the clown problem. I mean, okay, let's start at the beginning. So the chapters are about Tom. And Tom is part of this group of kids who we find out has been summoned to the Wandering Inn by the Blighted King called Othius the Fourth. And Othius told all of these kids who got summoned to his room, they are the heroes who are going to drive out demons from his kingdom. Sound familiar to anybody?
Yeah, they got the isekai treatment.
Yep.
They got the Type 1 Class A isekai-ing. They were given, like, in one detail, are they not literally just straight out of a protagonist, learn to draw class? There's a fucking lot of them.
Yeah, and there's a fucking lot of them.
Oh, and, you know, if I was one of them, that would make me way more nervous. Because no protagonist comes in alongside a whole bunch of other extra potential protagonists without a lot of people dying.
I don't think we can talk about these chapters as individuals. I mean, we could, but that they really go together in this kind of blended together moment.
Yeah.
It feels like Pirate wrote one whole. This ultimately becomes why their chapters become such long ones, because they tend to write these full ass fucking short novels, and then they used to break them up, but they don't anymore.
Yeah, like 1.00C and 1.01C really do feel like one singular long chapter to me. That was split up a bit at a good dramatic moment. Like, I think though, before we get into the clownness of him, this is also where we get really introduced to this other group that we met during the phone call. This sort of mysterious, the people who had the hero class and were pulled in and, like, were told why they're here. And we realize that they know about as fucking much as anybody else does, and things are not great.
And not only do we meet them, we discover the limited amount of information anybody has and how much of that information is conditional on something that they don't necessarily understand or even have awareness of. They're just being herded around by this king, Othius, and his flunkies, I guess is the only way to think of it. Along with Tom, in this chapter, we're introduced to a few other figures, specifically a hydromancer named Emily and Richard, a knight. They become like figures touchstone figures about the group. And there are people who pick up other classes. Like, there's mention of a Kevin who becomes a thief. There are so many of these kids here, and they all have, like, level one hero classes, and none of them ever level the hero class. There's so much fascinating, like, foreshadowing and bits and bobs that Pirate drops about the class system and about how, like, heroes qualify for level ups.
Yeah, Hero is so deeply cool and mysterious to me. But this is the first time that we have gotten a chance to see a large number of Earthers conversing together about what they're doing and why they're here. And it's always funny to me how they're like, oh, one of the first things we get is this Eddie guy trying to, like, reference, though, we must be in something like Final Fantasy.
Yeah.
You gotta wonder how many of these kids before the tragic a whole lot of them died really did think they were in a video game or something.
Right, and this is not even the first time, but certainly one of the times where you see the kind of bloodthirsty nature of this world, because they're first introduced to the world as valuable heroes who will do great things, and then they're tested against the demons, and because they're children, of course they fail. These are kids! That's the other thing that's very clear, is that they're all kids. And then they're sent to fight demons, and they fail, and they're kind of left by the wayside until suddenly...
plot happens.
Yeah.
But it says a lot about how, like, not together the plan involving summoning these people must have been, that they really did think they could just summon up a bunch of, like, late teens, early 20s people from Earth and get anything useful. Especially because they mostly got a bunch of Americans.
Yeah, that is true. They are consistently Americans, which...
well, this group is very consistently Americans.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, this group is consistently Americans. And since the king guy is the one doing the summoning, he's the one who chooses... at least you assume he's the one who chooses the conditions, whatever the conditions are for summoning them. So I wonder if that's commentary from Pirate about what kind of people the kids that he summons are.
Maybe. I'm uncertain how much control he might have over the process, given how little, like, he seems to have grasped how it works, given what we see in this chapter, where he just throws a whole bunch of them away and then sticks them in a side corner. I make sort of a joke crack about they mostly got Americans. They, you know, pulled a bunch of 19 to 20-something-year-olds out of some other less developed country where you have to, I don't know, work for a living and not go to college for, you know, an extra 4 years before you have to hold a job. They might get somebody more useful. But there actually, you know, is probably real use to getting people from a place like here, the UK, India, China, where you have, like, a whole lot of people with education systems and the potential to pull out, like, people who know what the fuck they're doing about something fancy and sciency, and maybe the system is trying to dig up somebody who has knowledge.
Maybe they just wanted guns.
Oh, yeah, no, if you wanted guns, Americans are the people to pull from.
I mean, yeah, that's where I was sitting on. Maybe just wanted guns. But I broke up these two chapters into, like, three bubbles in my head. One bubble is the revelations that Pirate drops about the leveling system, because this is where Pirate introduces red conditions, because Tom gains the condition Lesser Insanity, implying there's greater insanity in the first place, which is holy fuck. Also, he actually has his own music. Whenever he goes around, literal clown music follows him, which is fucked up. And the evolution of what it means to level and what it takes to level, yes, kills so many people, but it also reveals very easily, one, either Pirate understands how inherently creepy clowns are, or Pirate was looking for an example of how even the most mundane of classes can become something super dangerous. Clowns can tumble around the battlefield. They can be missed. They can be hit, but because it's not funny, they heal themselves. They get to play with knives and throw them, and they'll hit whatever they throw it at. Or maybe they'll miss, but whatever they miss, whatever knife that should miss will instead go through the throat of somebody nearby. Like, it's horrifying.
Or they throw a knife, they miss, and then a slapstick comedy chain leads to, like, somebody getting kicked in the balls by a horse.
And that person who gets kicked in the balls by the horse happens to be the general of the fucking army or something. Like, the amount of crazy shit a clown could do, kind of, yeah.
Yeah, and this is kind of why I was talking a bit about other clowns coming into this. Because the idea of a clown is so malleable. We think of clowns as everything from sad, washed-up guys at children's birthday parties to overly artsy, professional sad clowns to It, to the Joker. They run a full gamut of what they can be. And I think that it's really interesting the way that that can be represented in a class that feels like it could actually do anything, like almost literally anything. Discworld Battle Clowns.
Like, there's so much crap in this that drops implications in the leveling system just with the hero thing as well. Because you find out that they get the hero class, they qualify for it, and then none of them level up in it. And then he does this crazy shit, and he gets a bunch of levels in hero. And you have to wonder, what the fuck is the qualification? Is it doing crazy shit? And it's not just like they're attacking monsters, because they did that. They were set up to fight against monsters, and apparently he did that. So you have to wonder, well, like, what the fuck are the qualifications for this hero class?
Whatever they are probably not as straightforward and traditionally, heroic as maybe we think they are. If there's ever a class where how other people see you matters, it's gotta be hero.
Right.
And I wanted to talk just for a second, though, because you have Richard, who to all appearances is, honestly, he's low-key one of my favorite characters in the whole story. The idea of this guy riding around, like, with a sword and a cowboy hat, I love it.
Okay, yeah, it is kind of awesome to think about a cowboy knight.
Exactly. And he is apparently charismatic and like has good enough personality to hold the group together and be considered the leader. He perfectly can hold his own in a fight. Generally speaking, when like he's talked about here, he's always
The guy.
the guy. But the guy is still a level one hero, and at the end of this, the clown is not.
Okay, so the second part of this breakdown would have been the how Pirate sort of showed it's a pretty big revelation to discover the source of whatever summoned them, because it's pretty clear at the end of this chapter that the Blighted King is the one who summoned all of the Earthers, right? So clearly this was an explicit attempt by said Blighted King to summon it. So Eren was also summoned by him. And you start to wonder, what the fuck is this conflict between the Blighted Kingdom and these demons? Are the demons are clearly evil as they're represented here, but at the same time, knowing Pirate and remembering the fact that the last time Pirate started a story with an Earther, they implied that the beings that were hunting them, goblins in those cases, were evil, and then not so much.
I mean, listen, the second chapter of this literally opens up with Tom holding a murdered child while these demons slaughter an entire village of people. I'm not here to listen to counter arguments about how they might not be that bad after all.
I don't know. I mean, it's I have that doubt in my brain because, sorry, I have that doubt in my mind because Pirate tends to be one of those folks who like goes, yeah, they're so evil. Let me tell you all the ways they're evil. Oh no, they're innocent. They're doing this because they don't have a choice. Like, the bait and switch happens a lot. And even at this point, back in my read-through, I was like, sus.
Something that I like, just to talk about actually that scene, because I just reminded myself of something that probably is not within the scope of this episode and probably might even to be its own episode. This is gonna sound really weird.
Go ahead.
Something that has been occurring to me throughout the whole book, and when I was rereading this, and something I've been kind of planning to do, is I need to really brush up on some of my Nietzsche. Because Tom, throughout his character arc after this, but in this book specifically, comes across as being, what's the word? Are you okay? Oh, no, hold on. I accidentally clicked on chapter two, and now it's laughing, and I need to close that off.
Yeah, it's not. First off, I don't laugh like that. Thank you so much. I was gonna mention this.
No, it sounded vaguely like you were sobbing the moment I said the word Nietzsche, because I was going to bring up nihilism, and
I'm not even going to. I'm not. I'm. You do your philosophy stick. I have other ideas about this.
well, it just it, he has this. We have a setting where the gods are dead is a known fact. There is no meaning to the world or in life. And we see in this, as Tom has his breakdown and his, issues. And this is something I think we'll definitely have to wait for the next one about Tom. But I feel like there is. He's like the nihilist clown serial killer, only instead of becoming a serial killer, he gains hero classes and generally is trying to do the right thing in his own awful, terrible, why is he smiling with a face full of glass way? And I really need to brush up on like my Nietzsche and maybe like do a deep analysis on this. I think there might be something here.
So if you can't tell, the chapter had some, the second chapter, 1.01c, had some interesting experiments. But before we get there, let's at least read the author note for 1.00c.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so Pirate writes, "This is part one of two of the Patreon story about a clown. And yes, it's odd. I found that my biggest challenge here was setting up an entirely different area of the world in less than 10,000 words while covering the entire chapter. And I failed, by the way. Just should I mention that this chapter is only the first two-thirds of the story, and the other half I intend to publish on Wednesday. But creating new characters is hard, especially in such short time. There's a good reason why people say the short story is the hardest fiction to write. This might be the worst chapter yet, or maybe it was enough to redeem itself. I don't know. All I know is that I'll finish the chapter, and yeah. Did you think this was going to be like the mating rituals chapter?
No.
Clowns. Their stories aren't so funny after all."
I didn't know this was even a Patreon vote at the time until I got to this after chapter note, because, I came in way after the fact. And no, this is about what I expected. Now, admittedly, it got way intense way faster than I expected. Like, the on-screen murder of a small child while the child is like, "Yay, our savior is here," and then the troll wanders in, like.
I just, yeah, there's a lot of devastating stuff in this chapter. I do want to like dig through some of the comments because there is a comment from another writer, Andrew Rowe, in the comments. Preface here, Andrew Rowe is the writer of, let me just make sure I say it right. Is another writer of Progression Fantasy, and he wrote Arcane Ascension and The War of the Broken Mirrors and a bunch of other really cool like progression fantasies, but he's definitely a different kind of writer than Pirate Abba, for example. And Andrew has spoken before about reading The Wandering Inn and then his inevitable having to step away from it because he just didn't have the ability to spend the time on it and felt that it didn't gel with his reading habits eventually. I think somewhere around volume 4 he gave up. But he does write this comment, and he says, "Very interesting chapter. The fourth wall mention is especially interesting and potentially illuminating about the setting as a whole. It's also very interesting to see that people can lose classes. I'm curious if that's unique to the hero class or if it can occur with other classes as well. That's it. Thanks for the great chapter. Keep up the great work."
That's cool.
I mean, I thought that was cool, and I thought I should mention it. And yeah, Andrew, you're probably never going to listen to this, but damn you for giving up on the fucking thing.
I mean, plenty of people do. It's a lot of story, and it's, not everything's for everyone.
And the other chapter, the other comment that kind of bumped out at me. Hold on. Oh, here it is. Abracadabra says, "Now this is how you properly write a desperate situation. Good job." There's lots of people who say a lot of interesting thing, like long comments, but that one hit me because yeah, I always forget that Pirate wrote a very good climax to a very good well as like very fast story. Something they haven't done in a while, right?
I don't know if I would agree with that.
Really? You don't think the troll moment is a good climax? You literally just said that.
No, I do. I think the troll moment's a great climax. I think that, like, everything here comes together to create, a very good climax, a very tense situation, a great final line that continues to harken back to the long history of, like, the comedian-esque nihilism clowns. I just don't think that it's not happened recently.
Okay. So, the second of the two chapters. And here we discover that the third hub of my discussion points was all about the fact that Tom is manic depressive. And that this is supposed to be a reflection of the system's interaction with somebody who has a fairly severe mental illness. Well, not severe, but I would say something that's fairly common. Manic depressives are fairly common.
I can't remember, was he just suffering from depression or was he bipolar? I missed that.
I think it's probably bipolar disorder because that's what manic depression is, bipolar disorder.
Yeah. Well, bipolar is just like the more recent, more proper terminology for it, I think, is all.
Yeah, I think so too, but it's usually used interchangeably because it's manic depression is literally the example. It's what happens to you. You go through phases of extreme activity and then you crash and go to the reverse and there's like no middle point and your emotions are always like riding one side of.
Yeah, I know what that is. I just couldn't remember because in the story, I thought he just mentioned that he had depression. I didn't know if he mentioned being bipolar or not.
Yeah, he reveals it in this chapter that he's manic depressive.
All right. Anyways, I actually don't think that's what happened here anyways. I think that what happened here is the bit with the kid and the troll and everything else. Like, this is the type of situation that in a normal person in the normal world where there isn't a class system to try and, like, hold people together at the seams probably has a psychotic break, severe PTSD, and years of therapy. Instead, the system decides that it's going to give him more clown levels and quantify his insanity in a more, what's the word, narrative way?
Yeah, I can see that.
Like, I feel like this is the system going, it's not great to have, you know, this person cease to function. Let me find a way to have him function that works better.
And this is the strangest thing to say, but this is the system being helpful, right?
No, it's the system thinking that it's helping. And it may even actually be, like, comparatively, when you have to consider, like, all of the possible options, this probably isn't the bottom of the list.
I don't even know what Pirate's intent was in terms of framing the bipolar disorder here and placing it on even to this day, I don't necessarily understand, like, why the link was made between the clown class, the system's attempts to reflect Tom's conditions and Tom's actual condition itself. Because, for example, I know Ryoka rejected the system itself, but if she hadn't, does that mean that the system would have quietly inserted some red conditions involving her very clear mental disorders?
Okay, I think for the average person, no. I think that for Ryoka, because amongst her many issues is the fact that she's so performative about things, and once had a blow-up wherein she beat up an otherwise friendly Yvonne before socking Saria in the face and then getting into a fistfight with Cal Ruse. I might have my order of events there wrong. He probably picks something up. Especially because of the way that she internally goes back and forth on it and dwells on it and how it defines her internally. Maybe she picks something up.
Yeah.
But I think for the average person, it's just, you know, the background of their life like it is for anyone else. And there is a character we meet later on who even says, you know, they could put something together to help out with that. So I imagine that across all the alchemy and other stuff, that it's probably more manageable, and Ryoka's antisocialness just leads her not to even ask if there's antidepressants in this world.
Well, let's hope so. On the other side, there's the second temple where a pirate actually played with media in this chapter, specifically including a soundtrack that quietly builds over the course of the chapter and then freaks everybody out. There's even a comment that literally says, "Mother, you motherfucker," and talks about how freaked out they were by the sound because they turned it up.
Oh, I've been going back and forth between the two chapters, just like checking things and making notes, and it keeps like startling me. And on a couple occasions, I've thought that it was like Oshi responding to something I'd said, and like.
I mean, I am insane, and I do laugh a lot, but I don't think I do it that way.
It didn't even sound like laughter at first. It sounds more like crying, and I'm like, okay, Oshi's now fake crying to judge me for something stupid that I said. What was it this time? And then like it then picks up, and I'm like, oh no, it's the soundtrack again.
Yep. I want to point out to connect back to, I know we're not there quite yet. I'm sure you have some commentary left on the chapter itself, but. So Andrew Rowe comments again and talks about something else. Sleep and waking are the same part of the nightmare. Very interesting implications in that line, as well as the fact that he's getting levels while conscious. Between that and the fourth wall existing, there's a lot to unpack from these couple of chapters. Absolutely, Mr. Andrew Rowe. This is one of those chapters that implies a lot, especially that there can be ways to alter your mental state to a point where the system is like, I always think of the system as like a monitoring, passive monitoring thing. And then when you reach certain things, it just sort of checks you when you're unconscious. And this thing applies that it's a lot more active a monitoring system. And there's ways to like alter your mind so you're constantly and at all times hooked up to it. It made me wonder way back in the day, even without Andrew's particular thing about it, if somebody could change their mental state enough that they could create some kind of like symbiotic link or backdoor into the system and like find out information in. You know, the way oracles in like ancient times were supposed to like imbibe drugs so they could talk about visions. But this time, instead of oracles imbibing stuff to get visions, you try to connect to the living system and use its monitoring thing to like find out stuff because it's everywhere, right?
Drop a sysadmin who has a drug habit into this setting, and they could probably figure it out.
I mean, yeah, that's what I was thinking about right then. Like, how could you? I thought that Tom at that point had kind of hooked himself into the system somehow, and that the hero class and all this and his mo Okay, the My Little Pony line, by the way, freaked me the fuck out. I'm just gonna say this right now. And apropos of nothing, there are so many lines in this chapter that are just so creepy, and I loved it, but I don't want to go back there.
But I really appreciate the way that like Tom is very clearly not funny, but it's very deliberately not funny in a way that the joke's failing just makes it scarier.
I think my best response to this chapter was essentially, this is the Joker. This is the Joker, right? Where's Batman? And Richard's gonna be Batman, right? Right?
Okay, so clearly, yeah, you're meant to be like thinking of and evoked by the Joker. But if anything, the ending of the last chapter going into this one, it makes me think a lot more of the comedian, which the modern Joker sort of ties back to the comedian, and then you've got like a whole wealth of shitty clowns that are all floating around as a result of those two, where it's like he has finally gotten the joke, and the joke is that it's not funny, but because it's all meaningless, it is funny again. Kind of like a backwards reverso logic. Like I was saying, unlike most nihilism clowns, he seems to be not. Okay, a lot of these characters, they have this thing where they go, ah, it turns out that there's no meaning to anything, and that's the joke. Ha ha, I'm gonna go kill people now. Whereas he seems to be channeling it, well, marginally more positively.
It was a lot. It's a lot, and it was great. And I know that there was a lot of negative opinions to the Tom chapters as well. And I don't mean to be like gloss over the mental health aspect of it. Honestly, I don't feel qualified to talk about bipolar disorder or whether this was an accurate description of it, or even if it was tangentially something that might be difficult to process. I can't talk to that kind of, I can't speak to that. I do hope at some point we do get like a psychotherapist or somebody who's, more knowledgeable about this stuff on the show, because I think we can. I'm too lazy to look for them.
I have a friend who has a degree in like therapy psychology stuff that I've been poking to actually read a few chapters from this, but signs point to unlikely.
Unlikely, but if it ever, we need a therapist at some point. And
Well, yes, we probably do both need a therapist, but that's got nothing to do with it.
what the, okay, you can't be exposing us. No, you know what? It's fine. It's fine.
That was a funny joke, and you know it.
It was funny. Okay, but wrap up. Let's do a wrap up. I love the chapters. I still love the chapters. Clown was one of the most interesting additions to Pirates' pantheon of characters, and I love it to this day.
Do we want to do the after chapter note?
Yeah, okay, fine. I guess we could do it. It literally Pirate just says that they're experimenting.
Yeah. Well, I guess my one thought is I wonder if it was hard to write because it was, a much more stepped up, gruesome, violent chapter, specifically the opening with the kid bleeding out, or if it was just hard because it's a very strange mindset to try and get into and write in a very strange. It's a very strange tone to hit trying to capture Tom not being funny but still being creepy. I don't know. I could. Pirate definitely pulled it off. Anyways, thank you everybody for listening to No Killing Goblins.
Wait. Remember, before we go, we have to ask a question.
I was literally about to ask the question.
Oh, fine. Tell me I'm stupid without telling me I'm stupid. Go out. Go on.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to No Killing Goblins again. And we do have another great question today. And I'll be honest, I'm kind of stuck on all the different ways that a clown can be a clown in the wide spectrum of clownness. So if you were going to take the class clown, what kind of clown would you be in The Wandering Inn?
Mimes don't count.
Yes, they do.
Fine. Thanks for listening, everybody. Say bye, Dryness.
Why does everybody hate mimes? Goodbye, everybody. Mimes are objectively the least scary clowns.
You've been listening to No Killing Goblins.
Edited by Discanter.
The music on No Killing Goblins was composed by System Glitch. They can be found at youtube.com/systemglitch. You can get in touch with us via our Twitter at NoKillingGoblin or email us at NoKillingGoblins with an S at gmail.com.